Chapter 18. By the time we were done, we had a pile of parts that had been sliced off the Falcon, giving us a half meter of clearance on each side. Basically, we had sliced right through the wings and entirely cut away the bulges on top and bottom that housed the wings and some of the weapons, shaving away anything that stuck out from the oval-shaped hull. Our quick and dirty work had rendered the Falcon useless for future missions, which did not matter because if the current mission did not succeed, there would not be any future missions. To avoid foreign object damage to the Maxolk's dropship, we would hopefully be flying out of the cavern. We opened the Falcon's back ramp and stuffed all the junk we cut off inside. Then we got back in the cockpit and prepared to move. Note that I said move and not fly, because we did not need the Falcon to fly with its wings clipped.
"I've never done this before,"
Pope told me with a tentative thumbs up as we completed the checkout procedure. Some of the stuff we cut away had included power conduits and other components important to the operation of the craft. The checkout confirmed that backup systems had taken over enough for the Falcon to do what little we needed it to do. I feigned surprise. "You have never guided an alien spacecraft through a doorway inside a tunnel under the surface of a moon thousands of light-years away from Earth?"
"Well, that too. I was talking about guiding the ship while it is sliding down a tunnel, not flying."
"Pope, you are a real pilot. If you like, I can do this so you can blame me if we crash into the door or anything else."
"My aircraft, sir," he answered firmly.
"You got it." "Releasing Gecko Grip," I announced, deactivating the feature of our landing skids that allowed them to cling to the tunnel floor. That part of the tunnel so close to the cavern was not a steep slope, so our wingless Falcon did not rocket forward. It gradually picked up speed. Pope used the side thrusters to keep us on course through the doorway, while I puffed the nose thrusters to keep our progress at a steady pace. As we approached the doorway, the sensors showed we were within half a meter of the optimum center line, which was great, except we only had half a meter to spare on each side. Pope saw the problem and corrected. That threw us too far to the other side.
"You okay out there, Skippy?"
I asked to burn off nervous tension.
"Holding for now. Remaining in this condition uses a lot of power, Joe. I urge you to move quickly."
Going fast as we can." We were drifting off course again.
Pope, I see it. This is awkward, sir."
The nose of the Falcon slid through the doorway and everything looked great, except we were too far to the right of the center line. With a jolt and a screeching sound of tearing composites, the Falcon hit the doorway and lurched to the right, slowing almost to a halt. We could not allow the ship to block the doorway. Without waiting to alert Pope, I blipped the main engines and the Falcon skidded forward, forcing itself to scrape along the right side of the tunnel and through the inner airlock door. That doorway had a lip on both sides. The Falcon struck the right side lip about 3 meters behind the cockpit, and the tearing sounds got really loud. Figuring I could not make the situation any worse, I went all in and goosed the throttle again, forcing the Falcon forward into the dark cavern beyond the inner doorway. In a tribute to my sound judgment, everything went great, until the Falcon was 3/4 of the way through and something big, heavy, and important tore loose behind us. Whatever it was, it caused an explosion that threw our ship forward and to the left. The Falcon rolled to the left, the right side skid lifting off the tunnel floor, then crashing back down to rock side to side. With the synthetic display provided by Skippy showing the cavern in front of us was clear for at least 100 meters, and the Falcon no longer being pulled forward by gravity because the cavern floor was level, I inched the main engine throttles forward again, only this time, the action caused the Falcon to twist to the right. Pope compensated by firing the starboard nose thrusters hard, heeling us back toward a straight course. There was a loud bang behind us as something exploded, and I hit the emergency button to kill power flow to the engines. We were still moving forward, skidding across the floor, and a stack of what looked like crates under a top loomed in front of us. We had no brakes, so Pope engaged the thrusters in the nose, slowing us enough so the nose hit the stack of crates just hard enough to knock them over, and the Falcon's nose rode up the stack to come to a precarious halt.
"Wait, wait!"
I held up a hand to stall him as he was poised to kill main power. The cockpit displays were still working. I checked our position, making sure we were well clear of the doorway. Success. We were far enough from the door that we could have flown a Falcon through the gap, and Skippy said Maxolk's dropships were smaller.
"Okay, we're good. Kill the power before something else blows up."
Skippy helped a lot by groaning loudly.
"Joe, on behalf of all monkey kind, I am revoking your pilot license."
Skippy, I never officially had a pilot license. Plus, we were not actually flying at the time.
The colonel is correct, Skippy,
Pope agreed shakily.
Sir, respectfully, if we did not fly together for a long time, he threw up his hands, that would be great.
Hey, it worked, didn't it? Sometimes the brute force method is appropriate. He was not convinced.
If you say so, sir.
It's a guy thing. Skippy, where are these dropships? They're in separate hangars along the wall to your left. Give me a minute and I can... Yes! Lights snapped on in the cabin. No, there were no individual lights. The entire cavern ceiling glowed evenly. There were darker areas in the overall glow, like a section was missing a few pixels or whatever. With the light on, the cavern was revealed not to be craggy dark rock excavated to form a rough working space. All the surfaces were smooth, and the cavern was big. Big, like the far end had to be a kilometer away, and the center of the dome ceiling was maybe 500 feet above my head.
Why is this place so big, Skippy? If the kiddies needed all this room, why didn't they just inflate a dome on the surface?
Structures on the surface of an airless world are too vulnerable, Joe, especially in a star system like this one, with a greater-than-usual amount of comets and meteors drifting around. Incoming rocks hit harder here because there is no atmosphere to slow them before they impact the surface, and ejecta thrown up and outward by impacts travels far, wide, and fast. That is why structures like the moon base we just captured are covered with a thick layer of regolith.
Yeah, I rolled my eyes. That is a great safety tip for the vacation place I was thinking of building on the moon.
You didn't answer my question.
I did not answer your question because I do not yet know the answer, you knucklehead.
It is puzzling what the Maxalts use this facility for. I'm researching.
While I'm doing that, could you please move your asses with something resembling urgency? Holding this door open is becoming a strain.
Pope and I had been walking through the Falcon's cabin while I talked with Skippy, walking quickly as we could with the floor tilted and the ship still rocking from its precarious perch. Stepping onto the floor of the cabin, it felt weird. My expectation for a Maxalt's facility was something fancy, all shiny chrome and glass. Other than the trick ceiling, this place looked like a warehouse in any large city on Earth.
Skippy, we're in a cabin that was kept cold, dry, and in low pressure. Why did the Maxalts cover things with tarps?
It does not make much sense to me either, Joe. My best guess is simple bureaucratic inertia. The facility technically was not abandoned, it was mothballed, put in reserve for possible future use. The procedure for placing a facility in reserve may call for placing protective covering over everything, whether the items are exposed to weather and dust or not. Wiping my finger along a crate that had been knocked over by our sliding Falcon, I left a trail in the fine dust.
There's very little dust, considering how long this place has been here. I just can't picture someone like that Mr. Snuggles asshole setting down his lunchbox to throw tarps over all this.
That is funny, the beer can chuckled. Bots very likely did most or all of the work, Joe. I do not think the Maxalts got their paws dirty with manual labor. The dropship you want is behind door number 3.
I like that game show?
No, the door is marked with the Maxalts' common language symbol for the number 3. See? Somehow he altered the lighting to shine on a large corrugated door. Apparently the Maxalt symbol for 3 was 3 dots arranged vertically. Maybe they had done things Barney-style for future alien Tomb Raiders like us. Pope and I shrugged and broke into a trot as the door slid upward, along with the 2 doors to the left. In case you were wondering, the Maxalt symbol for 1 is a long vertical bar, the symbol for 2 is 2 short vertical bars stacked one over the other. To the right was a 4th door. That symbol was the long vertical bar for 1 next to the 3 dots of 3. Barney style made it easy for me.
What's next, Skippy?
Pope should get into the dropship cockpit and begin the startup sequence. I will walk him through it. You should go through door number 1, and I will show you which components need to be removed from that ship to replace the worn-out parts of the ship we will be flying.
We can start that ship before I swap out the busted parts?
Yes. The startup process is for power generation and avionics gear. The parts you will be replacing are for attitude control that is used only in flight. Speaking of attitude, I'm pissed off about being used as a freaking doorstop, so get moving, monkey boy!
Pope got the manual steps of the startup taken care of, then he came out to help me while Skippy remotely continued bringing the dropship's fusion reactor online. Working well as a team under Skippy's very detailed directions, we got the required parts replaced and tested. "How long until this thing can fly, Skippy?" I asked as I closed the hatch covering the part we just replaced. "It is going slowly. These systems have not been used in hundreds of years. My best guess is 22 minutes until power reaches the minimum safe level for sustained flight."
"Do you want me to entertain you with a story?"
"No, I want you to tell us what other useful parts we should strip out of the two hangar queens to keep our bird flying."
"Oh, that is good thinking, Joe. You should do that more often."
17 minutes later, the cargo hold of our bird was littered with components we stripped off the other ships, all we could get in the short time available. The problem with the door had taken too long to resolve, and we were way behind schedule. Above us, Sims had to be fretting at the delay. With more time and more people, we could have taken extra supplies from the other dropships, but we did not have more people, and I wasn't willing to risk us being down there any longer than we had to. Pope and I got into the cockpit and strapped in. Fortunately, the flight controls could be adjusted because both of us were shorter than a Max Ulks, and when I first plopped my ass in the seat, I could barely see the holographic display in front of me. Even at maximum adjustment, Pope had trouble seeing the bottom of his display. It would have been awkward for me to suggest he sit on something like a booster seat, so I kept my mouth shut. The stupid power level meter was moving much too slowly, and there wasn't anything we could do about it.
"Aha!" Skippy exclaimed. "Got it! I understand now why the Max Ulks built this place and why it had to be so deep under the surface. It also explains anomalies I found in the stars' behavior. Joe, those rotten kitties were testing their ability to manipulate stars. They must have tried to reverse-engineer Elder devices they used as weapons in their brief war against the Rindaloo."
"Whoa. The last time they used Elder weapons, they got their asses stomped by Sentinels. You're telling me they're stupid enough to try it again?"
"It's not the same as last time, Joe. Before, they misused Elder devices for destructive purposes. This time, they are trying to make their own devices that are not as sophisticated or powerful, but are based on the same technology. If the Max Ulks can make a star go nova without relying on Elder devices, it is possible that the Sentinels might not interfere. I do not know their parameters."
"Did it work?"
"The star is still here."
"The star is here and still functioning. However, there are anomalies in its internal structure that remain long after the experiments were discontinued. From what I can tell, based on the little evidence I was able to collect, the Max Ulks were surprisingly successful. That is a worrisome development. Certainly it is not good for the Rindaloo or their client species. There is nothing to be concerned about in the short or even medium term. The Max Ulks merely demonstrated they understand the basic principles of how to collapse a star. They are far, far from being able to create an effect that could endanger a star. Although, running calculations here. I need to create a model and run a couple trillion variables through it. You two should, I don't know, talk amongst yourselves or something."
Pope looked at me.
"Talk amongst ourselves? About what?"
Silently, I held up three fingers, then lowered them one at a time, counting down. When my index finger was halfway down, Skippy came back to us.
"Got it! Whew! That was an interesting intellectual exercise. Wow. After engaging in pure high-level thinking like that, I feel clean again. Dealing with you ignorant monkeys always makes me feel, like, creepy and dirty. No offense."
Pope shook his head slowly while I responded.
"Why would we be offended by that?"
"Oh, goody," he said cluelessly. "What did the Max Ulks do?" I asked as I watched the power meter moving upward with agonizing slowness.
"Did they iron bomb the star? Something like that?"
"Iron bomb? Joe, I would be impressed by your esoteric knowledge of stellar physics, except I know you got that from Wikipedia. No, dum-dum, they did not iron bomb the star. Doing that requires too much energy to be practical. There are easier and less energy-intensive ways to disrupt or even kill a star. While we wait for the power level to reach minimum setting for flight, here's a hint, Joe, staring at the power meter will not make it move any faster, I will give you a Barney-level explanation of the experiment the Max Ulks were conducting here. You know that a star keeps its structure by the outward force of its internal fusion reaction pushing in balance against the inward force of gravity pulling downward, right? If the fusion fails, gravity will cause a star to collapse, which compresses the core and can restart the fusion reaction, blah, blah, blah. Why am I explaining this to you? Oh, whatever. Anyway, what the Max Ulks were doing had nothing to do with manipulating gravity or fusion reactions. Instead, they were monkeying with... You get the pun there?
That was funny.
They were monkeying with the star's magnetic fields. The evidence shows they were mildly successful in creating minor solar flares. Nothing big enough to threaten a planet, or even nothing bigger than the flares the star normally creates by itself. However, these flares were created in a controlled fashion by the Maxalts, and that is an impressive accomplishment. If the Maxalts are able to scale up their capability, they can use the star's own magnetic fields to create a gap where the outward force is temporarily not pushing upward. Gravity in that area will pull a section of the star inward, collapsing it toward the core. That effect, if it can be maintained long enough, like for a few minutes. Minutes? I was stunned. That's all it takes to kill a freaking star? Yes, Joe. Basically, once the effect is started, the star kills itself by the unbalanced forces tearing the star apart. I suspect the Maxalts were not trying to actually kill a star. More likely, they wished to use solar flares as a weapon of mass destruction. What they could do is turn off the effect before it fatally damages the star. The result would be a controlled, focused, and massive solar flare. A solar flare that could be aimed at a planet. Holy shit. Hey. Something in my memory was standing on a chair, waving its hand and shouting to get my attention. You did something like that during our second mission when we got ambushed by that Theranan destroyer squadron. You created a hole in a star, then released it. That created a solar flare that wasted those enemy ships.
Yeah, sort of.
Joe, what I did back then was create a very minor, localized effect, Skippy explained. It looked impressive on the display, and it sure cooked those destroyers. However, that little flare dissipated quickly and would not have posed any threat to a planet, not even a planet orbiting close to the star. You do get bonus points for connecting the dots, for you are correct. The effect I used back then is basically related to the experiment the Maxalts conducted here. Also, I must confess that I kind of hurt myself back then. Even for me, digging a hole in the star is a major strain. The stress came close to making me lose connection to higher space-time. Before I try a wacky stunt like that again, I will need to exhaust all other possibilities and be very, very careful if there is no other option. And hey, the power level is now just past the minimum. See? When you stop watching, it moved faster. Great. I clap my hands. Pulp, let's get this thing off the ground. The simulator Skippy created for us was damned good. Our shiny new used dropship's performance closely matched the simulations. The difference could be attributed to that particular ship's age and condition, not to any failure on Skippy's part. We carefully flew the bird past our busted Falcon. I avoided looking at its scarred right side. Through the inner and then outer doors, with the amazing Maxalt's technology keeping us precisely 2 meters off the floor of the cavern and then the tunnel. Once the tail was clear of the outer door, Pope set us down and held the ship in place while I ran out to get Skippy. "Wait, Joe," he warned. "How do you plan to do this? You can't get close to me. The mass effect I am creating is very localized. You need to stay 20 feet or more away or you will get pulled toward me. As soon as I release the effect, this stupid door will slam closed, so we will only get one shot at this." "I got you covered, Skippy." From my belt, I pulled the rope. "There's a fancy Theranan basket grappler doodad on the end of this rope." "Doodad? I call it a thingamajig if you like. It's sticky nanofibers. I'm going to toss this thing above you. It will fall down and get itself tangled around you. It is designed to wrap around awkwardly shaped objects, so it does not need to stick to your shiny can." "I would appreciate that, Joe." "Okay, give it a try." It took me 3 tries before the doodad fell down over him. The first 2 times, the weird local gravity field he made caused my aim to be off. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. The 3rd time, it got securely wrapped around itself with Skippy inside the tangled mess and the rope on my end. "Ready?" I hauled back on the rope, and it stretched tight. "Wait." "Wait for what?" "I want another moment to enjoy seeing you as a doorstop. You are awfully cute." He released the mass effect without warning me, and I fell backward on my ass, my weight pulling him clear of the door, even in the moon's lower gravity. When I rocked back upward, the recoiling rope pulled his can to smack into my chest, sending me tumbling over again, and him to go spinning off careening around the tunnel. At least I was smart enough to have the rope clipped to my flight suit belt so I didn't lose him, and by the time I got myself sorted out and reeled him in, the outer door had slammed closed with a force that shook the tunnel and caused moon dust to rain down from the ceiling. Inside our shiny new used Maxalt's dropship, with me in the co-pilot seat and Skippy still wrapped up in the sticky fiber strands on the deck between couches, I rechecked the power systems while Pope gently lifted us off the tunnel floor to hover in the center of the shaft. "Is everything okay, Skippy?"
"It is now.
When I first programmed the autopilot to fly us up the tunnel, it responded with, 'You want me to do what?' It has settled down now. I overwrote some pesky lines of code to make the flight computer more compliant. We are good to go, but please, Joe, do not touch the controls. You wrecked the last ship you were flying. We shot out of the tunnel entrance, soaring above the still radioactive crater.
Dutchman, this is Bishop. I need a sit rep.
Sims would have notified me of any serious problem, otherwise she knew not to contact me while we were in the tunnel.
No sign of enemy activity anywhere in the system. The Falcon with Smythe's team is 7 minutes from docking with us, she reported crisply, giving me all the facts I needed.
Outstanding.
Sims, I am terribly sorry. I wanted to get you a nice snow globe from the gift shop down in that cavern, but all they had was this stupid dropship.
I will control my disappointment, sir.
She must have been checking sensor data.
The Falcon you flew down there will not be joining us? What happened?
Skippy answered for me.
Do not ever let Joe fly anything. He should not be driving either.
I crashed the Falcon. That was after we sliced parts off it to fit through a doorway the beer can should have told us about. Technically, it wasn't a crash because the Falcon was sliding on its skids at the time. It's a long story. I am sure Skippy is eager to tell you all about his new career as a doorstop.
The beer can objected to that.
Hey, you jerk, I should—
He's auditioning to be a paperweight next.
Colonel, Sims spoke before Skippy could respond. That Falcon is full of human DNA.
Yeah, that's not going to be a problem.
Sir? It's not a problem. How's that?
Because, Sims, remember, we're going to drop a nuke down that tunnel, and another nuke on that moon base. It's not like using two more nukes will get us into more trouble.
There was a pause before she replied. No doubt she was wondering how she had gone from a career as a logistics officer to somehow nuking alien moons.
I will get the crew working on loading two nukes into missiles, sir.
There is no one alive in that cavern, and we can't leave any witnesses at the moon base, I assured her.
It's not loss of life that concerns me. We're using nuclear weapons in a way that seems almost casual. I don't think that is a good thing. We shouldn't get used to it.
I hear you, Sims. Her discomfort with flinging nukes around mirrored my own thoughts on the subject. The difference was I was the commander, so I had to keep my doubts to myself. Think of a nuke as our way to leave a zero-star review of the crappy gift shop in that cavern. That made her laugh.
Yes, sir.
Besides, Skippy wants revenge on that stupid door.
That's a fact, Jack, the beer can agreed with enthusiasm. I'll show that door who's the boss, huh? Who the man? Skippy! That's who!
We dropped a nuke down the tunnel and another in the center of the moon base before we jumped away.
Colonel, Sims prodded me in a whisper while she stood beside the command chair. We accomplished the impossible again, and none of our people were injured. Now we have a Maxolk's dropship just like we wanted. Yet you do not look happy.
It's okay. I'm pleased that the mission succeeded despite all the curveballs the universe threw at us again as usual. It's just that... I sighed. We have a dropship. That only means we can tackle the next impossible task, and we don't have a workable plan yet.
It will take us, she glanced at the main display, 15 days to reach the Pixie Factory. That's plenty of time to dream up a plan, she added with a wink.
Yeah, no pressure then.
If Adams were here right now, would she say something about sucking it up and getting your ass in gear? Our Marine Corps sergeant is tactful like that.
Gunnery sergeant, I looked up at my executive officer. Not sergeant. She gave me an earful about that.
Yes, she would make an inspirational speech to get my ass in gear.
All right, Sims, you have the con. I rose from the chair. Time for me to start working. I'll be in the gym if you need me.
The gym?
I think better when I'm moving, or doing anything other than trying to think.